The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Greetings, loved ones. This is episode number 26 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back. Have we all recovered from PAX yet?
Sort of.
I
still feel like I'm shaking off the dust. I know I'm certainly eating like I'm still at PAX. Like, I didn't go back to my workout routine at all. I don't think I've had any sort of vegetable or lettuce in like 2 weeks.
Sometimes you gotta stay at that vacation food. It's the best.
I've been eating my weight in Reese's peanut butter pumpkins.
Pumpkins.
Yeah.
It's pumpkin season.
I know. They're
serving the pumpkin spice lattes already at Starbucks.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's like first week of September.
Are you guys fans of those?
I don't do coffee.
Me neither. Don't like the way it tastes or smells.
Yeah, it's gross.
Thank you, Katie. Someone who agrees with me.
Yeah, I'm an herbal tea person too.
They don't do pumpkin teas?
I haven't seen one. I don't know. I'd be up to try that, but I haven't seen one anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about pumpkin. Like I said, I do love the Reese's peanut butter pumpkins. And then I remember being at a... I remember hanging out with friends last year, and somebody introduced me to a liquor called rum chata.
Yes.
They had right? And they mixed pumpkin with the rum chata. And I remember when she was selling me on it, she was like, you know, we're going to get a pumpkin. And I was like, girl, I don't do pumpkin. That's not really my thing. She's like, you'll do this. Trust me. And then she mixed the pumpkin with the rum chata, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would absolutely do that. So if we go out, shots are on me.
You got it.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So our shout out this week, we have a new review on iTunes from our friend Pat Uglow. He is a co-host of the Leaving a Legacy podcast. So if you're into legacy, be sure and check those guys out. I got to listen to their show this week, and I thought they were really enjoyable. And he says, love the podcast. I enjoy hearing all the great things that you are doing in your respective communities. You all bring a high level of knowledge, experience, and humor to my Fridays. Keep up the great work, ladies. All of us guy podcasters are trying to keep up with you. Well, that's what we like to hear. Also, shout out to our friend Gabby Sparks, who took down the Standard Super League last night.
Yay!
Big shout out to her. And she's also going to be doing commentary in Texas in 2 weeks for their WMCQ event.
Sweet.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
So she's doing big things. And she promised me that there would be cowboy hats involved. Because when she said Texas... I was like, I want to see you on stream with a cowboy hat. Promise me that. Like, howdy, y'all. This is Gabby Sparks. I thought that'd be great. She's going to kill me, but it's all in good fun. Woman of Excellence this week is April King. April King was nominated by our friend Mike Linneman. She is a judge who is known for running a weekend program for kids in the area to teach them magic. She also assists with local charity events, and she's an art collector who helped organize and moderate an art panel at GP Omaha. And she also takes collections of cards so that when she's teaching the kids magic, she can give them cards that people give her. So she's certainly doing big things in her community, so shout out to April King. I got the chance to meet her a couple times. She's judged certain Midwest events, and I've always found her to be particularly lovely. So a big shout out to her. And let's go ahead and get started. So SCG Cincinnati was this past weekend. It was a Modern Open. Todd Anderson won the whole thing with Infect. The semifinals actually boiled down to an Infect mirror match. I don't know if you guys saw that. Sounds like a good time.
I decided not to watch it. Like, we got to, like, what was it, to that, and I was like, I don't want to watch Infect versus Infect. We'll do something else.
That seems like it'd be very skill intensive, though. I'm planning on watching the match actually tonight, but it seems like I mean, how do you know, like, when to block or when to attack them? Or, you know, I mean, they're both, like, there's only 10 points of poison, so I feel like that'd be a very skill-testing matchup for that deck.
Well, I heard Spellskite was very important.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I heard it. From what I understand, they each had a Spellskite out at one point, and I don't even know how that would go down. So basically, top eight was Infect, Affinity, Merfolk Affinity, Blue-White Control, Blue-Red Twin, and Slivers?
Yes! Slivers!
Did you see this deck?
Yeah, yes. I heard that it beat Affinity because the Affinity player attacked into the Slivers player with a Vault Scourge, and the Slivers player had a Predatory Sliver out and vialed in a Gale Rider. It was amazing.
Yeah, I tuned into the match against Jeskai Twin, and there everybody was rooting for the Slivers deck, and I was rooting for it regardless. But when I also saw that Jeskai Twin, people haven't played Jeskai Twin in a while, so I went into it going, girl. Jeskai? Okay. So I was already kind of not rooting for Home Slice on Jeskai. But then Slivers is doing his thing, and he either vialed in a Sliver Overlord or the Sliver... Yeah, the Sliver Hive Lord. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. So there were Slivers I'd never even seen before. So there was a Necrotic Sliver, which is where you can sacrifice the Sliver to destroy a permanent, which is amazing.
Yeah, I've played against that in Commander. It's gross.
Yeah, I didn't even know what that did. And then there was Darkheart Sliver, where you can sacrifice a Sliver to gain 3 life. There was a Sinew Sliver, which gave it +1/+1. Siphon Sliver for lifelink. This deck was real. I had so much fun watching this.
It's like a total toolbox deck. It's like new pod, but different.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me more of Merfolk, between the Aether Vial and everything else, and having so many ways to get around things, where it's like you have Gale Rider, where you can give them flying. There's a sliver in the sideboard that gives them shadow. There's a sliver where you can tap a sliver to tap a target permanent. It's just amazing. Like, I really hope this kind of picks up steam. Mm-hmm. So, other than that, there were two other decks that caught my eye. There was a four-color Loam deck, which was sort of a take on the Loam Pox decks, which I've been playing for a while, except this one had the same colors, actually, but this one revolved around Hakan Stromgold Scourge. The theory being that when you cast it, you then have cards in the graveyard that are changelings, or shapeshifter changelings, and then they count as knights too, and then you can just cast them over and over again, like Nameless Inversion, which is kind of gross. So if you have Hakan out, Hakan says that you can play knight cards from your graveyard, so you just keep casting Nameless Inversion over and over again. And if that doesn't work, you can also cast a spell called Crib Swap, which is 2 and a white, and remove target creature from the game. Its controller puts a 1/1 colorless shapeshifter token with changeling into play. And that also has changeling. So if you have a con out, you can just crib swap, Nameless Inversion, crib swap. I ordered my crib swaps. And then there's also Knight of the Reliquary, who is a knight, so that if you have Hakan out, you can just cast that from the graveyard, and odds are that you've been doing some dredging, so you're going to have some lands in the graveyard, and this is my jam.
Yeah.
Cool.
I actually like this, too, because I love Knight of the Reliquary.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty gross. It has Molten Vortex, and it has Life from the Loam, and all my old favorites, Smallpox, which is great, Vengeful Pharaoh. If I had the Lilianas, which I traded mine away, I would totally build this. I think this is a lot of fun, and I think it's a neat take on the Loam archetype. Mm-hmm. So,
I really like the Blue-White Control that made top 8. I've been trying to build something like this for a long time, but every time I build it up, I'm like, it's probably just not as good as, like, some other deck. And so I might actually, like, build this version and test it out at an FNM or something and see how I like it, because I've been toying with the idea for a very long while now.
Yeah, this seems to be a take on Yuya's deck from Worlds. We got Dragon Lord Ojutai, Wall of Omens, Restoration Angel, Snapcaster Mage, two Blade Splicer, which goes well with Restoration Angel, Detention Sphere, Cryptic Command, the usual suspects, a Valorous Stance in the main deck, two Supreme Verdict, which I think is quite good, and I could see this being a thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Chris, you've been trying, you played with Blue-White in the past, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what do you think about this? Like, do you think this is a good time to do this?
It could be. I was looking at the list earlier, and I was like, what do I really think about this? Like, is this my type of blue-white control, or what don't I like about it? I just thought Dragon Lord Ojutai might be iffy. I don't know why, I just don't know if I would want to play that. But the rest of the list looks, like, really cool. Like, I have a decent amount of these cards. Plus, I like that it has Moorland Haunt. Moorland Haunt is the shit.
Yeah, it is.
So much value.
So great. So I'm like, sweet. You know, I could maybe do that. Plus, I like that there's a lot of onesies in the sideboard. Like, I think that's pretty cool. Plus, it, like, runs Rest in Peace, and not everyone is doing that right now. I mean,
nor should
are.
They be.
So I was like, that's cool. Plus, Kataki War's Wage looks pretty cool. So I thought that might be kind of fun. So I could probably throw it together if I wanted to. I don't know about the Dragon Lord Ojutai.
Yeah. Ojutai seems weird because it's like so much mana and it's not instant speed.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, like, I guess, protect itself. But it just feels like, you know, for that turn, especially against like combo decks and something and stuff like that, when you just don't have any mana untapped. And sure, he's late game and all that jazz, but I don't know. He does seem a little suspect to me as well. But I just love the aggressive control decks. Aggressive control is really how I like it.
Me too.
I think Ojutai is best with the, there's that land from Kamigawa where you can untap a legend.
Is it a Gonjo Castle?
Either that's a different one. Minomo? Am I thinking of something else?
Oh, yeah, that might be it.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of it, but I can understand why he's appealing in Modern, because that way you can attack with it and then just untap it again. But I'd like to see, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, we've talked about this in the past, how there's yet to be, like, a control deck in Modern. You know, people have tried different things, and we tried Grixis for a while, but control's really never been the place to be. And I would really like to see one strategy sort of establish itself as you can be control in Modern. This is what you should do. And I think blue-white could be it. Like, I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other deck that people were interested in was from Adrian Sullivan, who showed up with Grixis Waste Knot, as only Adrian Sullivan can do. Four Snapcaster Mage, four Jace Vryn's Prodigy, two Tassigar, four Waste Knot, Cyclonic Rift, which is his baby, three Funeral Charm, four Burning Inquiry. I'm in.
Going deep there.
And, of course, Koligon's Command. And then, the theory is basically just to make you discard things, and then he benefits from the Waste Knot, and he has a good time. So.
Seems good.
You seem doubtful, Katie.
I am doubtful. I'd have to see this baby in action to know, really, how well that works.
Yeah, you know, I admit it's something I would play. If I had the Snapcasters and the Jaces, I would give it a go. Like, I think it looks like fun. The only concern I have is with Waste Knot, because people love their Spell Snares. Spell Snare is like a main deck card nowadays, and not to mention Remands and things like that. And I just don't know how often you're going to get a Waste Knot to stick. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Waste Knot is such an integral part of the strategy, where if you don't have a Waste Knot, then you basically just have a Grixis control deck. And that might be enough, but I'm just not sure how often you're going to get your trademark card.
Yeah, I like Waste Knot a bit better in Standard, because, like you said, Aaron, you can't always get it in under those two mana counter spells. Like, sometimes you can land a Waste Knot before they have dissolve mana or something, and you just sort of take over the game with it. Robert has built Waste Knot for Standard, and it's pretty gross. But I'm not really sure about it for Modern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not like he really has a lot of counter magic to back it up. He's got the spells in the sideboard, but that's pretty much about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the duck looked like fun, but it's definitely an Adrian Sullivan brew. And, you know, we've talked about how, and God bless him, like, we love Adrian, but, you know, there are just certain players out there that can bring a deck like this and do well with it. You know, like, if you put it in my hands, it would be a clumsy mess. Like, I just can't do the things that Adrian Sullivan does. And I kind of had to remind myself of that. Like, when I saw the list, I was like, I would play this! And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not him. so I just don't have that magic to make a spicy deck like this work. So, and that's no shade. It's just what it is. So, mm-hmm. Battle for Zendikar spoilers have been coming out fast and furious. Are there any cards in particular that y'all are looking forward to?
Gideon, my homeboy. We have a thing in my store where if you play the 5-mana Gideon and you plus him, you have to say, party at Gideon's with your hands up in the air, or you get a miss trigger.
Oh, really?
What? Not an actual one, but everybody says miss trigger.
Whenever I play the 5-mana Gideon, I just say, come at me, bro.
Oh my god.
Wow. What do you guys do for the other planeswalkers? Nothing?
No,
okay. All right.
Gideon is a special man in my heart.
Oh man. Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. I'll have to remember that for when I play it next. I like the idea of Ulamog. That could be pretty baller. And Desolation Twin seems good. And I feel like Grove Rumbler will be a problem. Like, I wouldn't play it, but it seems like it'll be pretty good.
I was interested in the new Kiora only because she looks so badass on the front. Like, she's working the new Biden that she stole from Thassa, and she's looking at you like, sup, Thassa? Yeah, I took your Biden, and it looks better on me. What? Like, she's just got this look on her face, and I am here for that whole plot line. I am here for that whole cat fight. I stole your Biden. I love every second of it, so I was very happy that they did that. And her emblem is so awesome. So she, when you ultimate her, she gets an emblem, and making the emblem gives you 3/8/8 blue octopi. Mm-hmm. And then the emblem says whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you can have it fight a creature. So the emblem comes into play first, then you get 3/8/8 octopuses, and then they get to fight something.
Yeah.
So the idea of 3 octopi taking down Ulamog. Oh, Ulamog's indestructible, so that wouldn't work, but just fighting anything is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing to point out, make sure you keep track of those quotation marks in that emblem. You get the emblem, and then the octopi are kind of like a separate deal, like mm-hmm. a free gift with purchase.
Yeah.
Not part of your emblem.
Right.
Yeah, it's not every time they enter you get 3. Because that would be super badass.
Yeah, that's the way that people were interpreting this. And I'm just having fun. I'm enjoying seeing people say octopuses. Nobody's saying octopi, so like I'm reading all these excited tweets like, I want to fight with the octopus, and I'm like, octopi? Like, octopi. Like, so I'm having lots of fun with that. Like, I'm waiting for someone to pull that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm keeping track of all the allies that come out, just because allies were really good in original Zendikar, and not only would I like to draft them, but if they're good enough, I would really like to build maybe like a Collected Company allies deck for Standard. Mm-hmm. Could be good. We haven't seen a ton of good ones like between 1 and 3 mana though, so I'm not sure if that's actually going to happen, but I'll keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm. The card that I was most excited about is Bring to Light. It is a sorcery, 3 green and a blue, and it has Converge, and you get to search your library for a creature, instant, or sorcery card with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of colors of mana spent to cast Bring to Light, and then you can exile that card and then shuffle your library. You can cast that card without paying its mana cost. Katie, quick judge question for you. Do I have to cast it immediately, or can that card sit there until I'm ready?
So the technical answer I have to give is that we have to wait till we see the FAQ for all the judges, because sometimes they put rules updates on certain cards.
Oh.
So I cannot reveal that information yet.
Okay.
And usually that's like the week before pre-release.
Okay. I'm thinking I'd be able to hold on to it. Like, it doesn't say that I have to use it right away.
Yeah, usually it terms and, like, it means until end of turn, if it just says, like, you may cast that card.
Oh.
Or, like, forever.
Okay.
I guess if it's till end of turn, it says until end of turn. So, probably forever. But we'll have to wait and see. Don't quote me.
Cut to 2 weeks from now where Katie's like, I've been demoted because I talked about Bring the Light.
I got in trouble.
So there's been talk of this card being good in Ad Nauseam as like a fifth Ad Nauseam, so that you can go looking for either Ad Nauseam or go looking for Angel's Grace if you're missing either one of those pieces. There's also been talk of this card in Living End. Because you can search for Living End, and because it has the suspend, you don't have to suspend it, so you can just cast it. So there's been talk of using it with Living End or Restore Balance or that really big Gargadon. So I'd be open to testing it in those situations. So, well, now, what do you guys think of the lore so far? Like, are you keeping up with the stories that are coming out and the flavor behind the set? Like, are you into that kind of thing?
I'm finding that I'm just more cognizant of the lore just because they're making more of a point of putting key story moments on cards. Like, it seems like the lore is kind of inescapable now, whereas, you know, during Return to Ravnica, I didn't know who won the Dragon's Maze. I didn't know what happened with that. I still don't know who won the Dragon's Maze. But, yeah, one thing I've realized as I've been watching the spoilers come out, or specifically the Expedition lands, is that I might be a little bit more of a Vorthos than I think I am.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't pay a ton of attention to magic art, or I haven't until recently, but when I've seen these lands, it's just sort of irked me to see, you know, Godless Shrine, Steam Vent, Sacred Foundry, all of these iconic places that I associate with the plane of Ravnica, depicted on Zendikar. You know, there's that stark contrast between Ravnica, you know, city plain, lots of urban development and stuff, and then Zendikar, which is like a complete jungle wasteland. Like, it just doesn't completely compute for me. Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that they all kind of look alike. Like, I'm not really seeing, like, when you're looking at the Ravnica versions of the art, you are unmistakably in a shrine or a church or in a garden or in a steam vents. And I'm looking at the temple garden and I'm looking at the flooded strand and I'm looking at the sacred foundry, and they're almost interchangeable to me, where it's like you could just as easily, I could see the sacred foundry art being a temple garden. I could see the temple garden art being a flooded strand. Like, I'm just not really seeing differences there. And maybe they're subtle and I'm just missing them because, hello, I don't do subtlety. But I don't know. I'm just not getting that unmistakable feeling like with Ravnica, where you are here. You are unmistakably here. They just seem to kind of go one into the other.
Yeah. I don't want hedrons in my temple garden.
Oh, man.
That hollowed fountain, though.
Yeah.
I think that one's unmistakably the most beautiful.
I would agree awesome. With that, yes. I do like that art, like, in and of itself, but it still, like, isn't Azorius for me, and it makes me a little bit sad.
Yeah. It makes me want to go there. So it gets kudo points for that.
See, I was looking at the Godless Shrine, because if you look really closely, it almost looks like a creature, like maybe like a statue or something. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty nifty. Like, I would definitely pick up one of those if I was playing those colors. But yeah, I definitely agree with you, Hallie, that they do kind of look to, yeah, they're just not my thing either. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of interested in the lore as well. I had a theory about Obnixilus, but I get a feeling that that theory is not going to pan out. So I was thinking that he was going to end up being sort of like the anti-hero of this set, where he was like, not because he was interested in doing any good, but because he was stuck on this shithole too. And so he didn't want to be killed when the world gets destroyed. So I figured he would like fight alongside of them purely for his own purposes. Mm-hmm. But now that he's a planeswalker again and he can peace out, I'm kind of going, well, maybe he's not going to do that, but then what is he going to do? Like, I think the character itself is really fascinating, so I'm anxious to see what he does, but I think my idea of him being an anti-hero isn't going to... I think he may just end up being like a thorn in their sides. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll ever work with the Eldrazi, but I think he'll just be like the... You know how like in the Batman movies they have like the two villains and they're sort of working together, but not quite? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what this might end up being, where like they're both villains and, you know... Yeah, they have to deal with them at the same time. So,
yeah, like the Eldrazi are the actual problem, and Obnixilus is just kind of like a distraction from that.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's going to be like that too.
So I was hoping that, Like, I really like the awaken mechanic, but I don't... It all seems like they cost so much to do, that I don't know how much awaken will get cast in standard, and I was really hoping it would be. And I'm sure there's still, like, potential for it, but when it costs, like, 6 mana just to walk into, like, the counterspell, it seems kind of, I don't know, not as fun.
Fancy. Yeah.
Not sure what to make of it yet either. Like, we'll have to see just, like, how fast or how slow the limited format is.
Or how fast or slow the standard format is, too.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, I can see it. I think it's viable in the sense that, especially with the type of control decks that have been seeing play in standard, you know, a lot of these decks they spend a lot of time spinning their wheels. So, for example, I'm looking at the card called Royal Spout, which is one, a white and a blue, where you can bounce a creature to the top of someone's library. That awaken cost is 6. I think with as dirtily as some of these control decks have been, I can absolutely see a deck getting to 6, having a need to bounce a creature and still being able to awaken something. Like, I don't think that's going to be difficult at all. But you're right, in limited, I'm not really sure. But I think in standard, it's possible.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I really like the black card that's like double black and 2 for the 4/3 flyer. Where'd he go?
Oh, the Smothering Abomination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like throwback to Desecration Demon times, kind of, and it, like, get to draw cards and stuff. I don't know. That one seems fun. Maybe I'll go be a black mage for a while.
Yay! come to the dark side. We have cookies.
Are they chocolate chip?
Yes, and they're soft.
No. Like those Las Vegas chip cookies.
Mm. Right? Because nobody likes hard cookies.
No.
Disagree.
you like hard cookies?
Like, not like super hard, but just like so they have a little bit of crunch to it. Like, when I make the cookies at work, I'll set them for a couple minutes extra, and then everyone's like, oh my god, Chris, you made them just the way I like them. I'm like, no. Someone have one too.
We could not work together.
Right.
At least
it's too chewy.
Time.
It's like, ew.
Oh, no, goodness. I'm the girl who will, like, I will pinch the packaging when I'm at the bakery to, like, see how soft the cookie is. And if the cookie, like, breaks, or if I can't, like, quite push it, I won't buy the cookies because it's too hard. I can't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm that
Albertsons has, like, the best soft chocolate chip cookies. Oh, I don't know if you guys have Albertsons there, but here.
Oh, I think it's called Jewel here.
Oh, like a Jewel Osco? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah. I also don't like cold cupcakes. Like, when cupcakes are in a cooler, that offends me. That offends me deeply. I can't.
I remember that, because Nick was like, here's some cupcakes. You're like, were they refrigerated or something? He's like, yes.
So her boyfriend likes to spoil me when I come to visit her, and he was like, you know, do you need me to get anything at the store? And I'm like, well, I could maybe use some cupcakes. And he's like, okay. And he comes back and he brings the cupcakes, and I could tell just sort of by looking at them. And he's like, you know, here you go, got you a 6-pack of cupcakes and some Diet Coke. And I was like, Nick, were these refrigerated? And he's like, yeah, they might have been. And I'm like, oh, I'll have to wait for them to thaw a little bit. Thanks for thinking of me. Yeah.
But after they go back to being warm, then can you eat them?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like, if you pull them out and it's, I can't do it. Like, I can't. I have issues, I know.
Remember this issues. If you decide to spoil us with cupcakes, folks.
Yeah. I don't know how it'll be an awkward interaction. We're like, you know, I love your show, and it's like, can you just sit on these? Like, literally sit on them for, like,
warm them up?
Yeah. Rub them between your hands or something? Just, yeah. So there was an article that went around the other day called 5 Places Bullying Still Exists in Magic the Gathering. And this was found on a site called manaleak.com, which I believe is a Euro site, maybe specifically UK. Mm-hmm. And the author was talking about places where we still find bullying happening, specifically online forums and groups. There was also mention of mobbing or witch hunts, which can happen in the community, social media, the Twitch streams during events. What did you guys think of this? Local game stores? Do you agree that bullying is still a problem?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's like, I mean, I don't, especially like at the LGS level, like I think there's probably, like, maybe, like, a few assholes, but maybe, like, everyone else is, like, pretty chill. I think it's just a matter of just avoiding those people or trying to maybe have them go play somewhere else or something like that. But I liked how they brought up that it does start with your local game store, because if you kind of dissuade someone from going back there, they're never going to play at higher level events or do anything else. And, you know, they might lose out on making, like, a lot of awesome friends because they had one asshole, like, ruin it for them, which is really unfortunate. And that was one thing that really resonated with me, especially when they said that elitism has no place in Magic. And I totally agree with that. And I was thinking about when we went to the Open in Chicago, and I saw Chris Brown again. And he was at, you know, he was like in third place. And before, last time I had seen him, he was at the last table with me. I mean, it's a constant, like, ebb and flow. I mean, just because you were riding high one day, it doesn't mean that you're always going to be. And I think sometimes when people are so used to, you know, being like the top dog at their small game store, or they're used to people like fawning over them for being such a good player, they don't always remember that at one point they were low on the totem pole, or that one day they might just scrub out of a tournament and be like, yeah, you know, sometimes you just get bad matchups or things happen. And I think there's something to be said for being humble about, you know, winning, and also, you know, trying to bring other people up to the spotlight with you. The other thing I liked was the stuff that they said about the live stream chat, and the exact sentence, what are you trying to accomplish by what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Because I think about that all the time. Like, it's like you wasted energy to, like, say this thing. It's like you could have said something way more constructive or creative or nice, like, instead of just being like, you're fat, lol. And it's like, okay, like, thanks for giving your opinion. So, like, to quote the dude, that's just like your opinion, man. So I just don't understand. People could put so much more energy into being positive. And I stand by what I said before when I talked about the backpacker. You would be so much cooler if you were nicer. And I definitely agree with that.
I'm always amused by people who keep watching streams they clearly don't enjoy. It's like eating a bad meal. It'd be like sticking your fork into your plate and going, this tastes like poo, but I'm going to keep eating it. Okay, here I go. And then complaining about it with every forkful. Like, if you look at the hashtags of an event, if you look at the hashtags of, like, an SCG Open or a GP, you will see the same person complaining about the event through the entire event. I could see if you say one tweet and you're like, you know what? This tournament's not going very well. I don't like this deck. I don't like this coverage guy. I'm going to turn this off and go eat goldfish and watch Netflix. Okay, cool. Girl, bye. But you get people that are like, you know, 12:57 p.m. Man, I can't believe they put this deck on. This coverage sucks. 1:06 p.m. What is this guy thinking? Did you see what he did with that plus one counter? Why am I here? 1:12. Oh, God, how could there be so much space in between rounds? Why am I watching? Turn it off! Like, you're clearly not enjoying this. Like, you could be doing anything with your time. Like, we're not asking you to be here. I'm so amused by that. Like, I can't stop scrolling. It just tickles me, because you can almost see them getting worse and worse as the event goes on. And it's just like, man, just find something better to do. You have to have something better to do. I don't understand why you would subject yourself to something you clearly don't enjoy.
Right.
I was actually really surprised as I was reading this when the author brings up the live stream chat issues. He says that there have been no female Grand Prix top eighters this year. And I guess the year went by so quickly that I haven't even registered that there weren't any, but that is really shocking to me, given just, like, how much growth we've seen in the community. I mean, I guess this is only, like, tangentially related to the article, but that was the line that struck me as the strangest, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like, I mean, I wasn't thinking this while reading it, but when you just listed off the places where bullying is still found, I was like, oh, is there any place bullying's not found? Like, this yeah. covered, like, it felt like every area of Magic, which I think is true, and not that it's, like, super prevalent in certain places. Like, yeah, some local game stores are awesome. Sometimes, you know, there's Twitch streams that are great, where everybody's supportive, and they're like, hey, I think you could have taken this card, and they're not worried about, you know, insulting people's appearances or whatever. And I think along with the local game store scene, I think people always say things that maybe they regret later. And yeah. I think just, you know, that's just human nature. People do that. You make a joke and somebody doesn't take it very well, and you're like, oh, that probably wasn't a great joke. But I think it's important that when that happens, you just apologize to that person. Like, apologizing seems really hard for people. Yeah. And a lot of times it can make a huge difference. Like, if you just go up to someone and you're like, hey, I didn't mean it like that. I'm really sorry that I hurt your feelings or that it wasn't taken well. You know, even if they don't look like soul crushed or something, sometimes that can mean a whole lot to them. And I think it's important to remember that saying sorry is not the end of the world. And it doesn't have to be like a huge thing, but if you're just like, hey man, sorry about that joke. I didn't mean for it to go that far, for you to take it poorly or anything, but I'll just not do that next time. And then just keep going about your day. Like, I don't think that that is a ton of time or a ton of effort, even though maybe it seems like it. I'm not sure. But I think if we just increased the people, like, people being aware of, you know, sometimes things aren't taken well, even if you don't mean them to be taken wrong. And I think an apology can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that. You know, I've been very open about my struggle with tilt, and I've gotten a lot better, but I've definitely had slip-ups. I know when I was in Seattle for a legacy event, I slipped up and I tilted. And immediately after it was done, I looked him in the eyes and I said, I'm sorry, I snapped at you. And period. There was no, I'm sorry, you're sorry, I'm sorry if I did this. No, I did this, I'm sorry. And it's so funny. We actually had the best interaction. I don't know if I told you guys about this. So after I apologized to him, he was like, it's no big deal. Do you want a cookie?
Yeah, you told us about that.
And I thought he was being a smartass. I was like, you shady bitch. And I went to, like, take off my earring. And he's like, no, no, no. And he pulls up this Tupperware container. And he's like, my wife literally brings cookies for F&M. Would you like a cookie? And I'm looking at him and I'm like, are there laxatives in here? Like, people will miss me if I don't come back to my house. And the people around me were like, it's fine. His wife likes to bake. They're really good. And he was really nice. And afterwards I took the cookie and the cookie was really good. And then even though I apologized and even though he accepted it, I still felt really bad because this nice guy had cookies the whole time. And I didn't know that. I was just so busy being a tilt monster. And that was an interaction that I was able to salvage by simply saying, I'm sorry. Like, I was an ass to you. I didn't mean to. I got it up in my head, and I was proud of myself for turning that around and forgetting the cookie. So that was a good thing. I think the thing I found so interesting about this post, and I'm not trying to say that the bullying doesn't happen, but, you know, I've put a lot of time into creating the best environment for myself. And, you know, our friend Brad Nelson on his Twitter feed, he says something to the effect of, you know, be around the people who want to see you happy or something like that. And I just don't go around negative places. You know, I curate my Twitter feed. Some would say that I'm block happy, but I'm happier for it. And my space is quieter for it. And so I don't get any bullying in my Twitter feed. I don't deal with that on my social media because I don't stand for it. You know, I don't go to game stores that I know I'm going to have a negative experience at. I don't surround myself with negative people. So sometimes I do sort of end up in this bubble where I don't, it's not that I don't believe these things are happening, but because I've done such a good job of making my space so positive, sometimes I get reminded of how crummy the world can be, and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Like things aren't good.
I'm in sort of a similar place. Like the author mentions at the end of the post that, you know, the local game store experience and the people who are around you when you start playing Magic are really what make or break your experience. And I was fortunate enough to have very positive people around me in my local community, and still do, which is great. I have seen a bit of the dark side of it now that I've had some experience moderating online forums, because, you know, as the article mentioned, it's kind of hairy in there sometimes. And sometimes when you try to be polite and moderate, people will fight back with you, and that's the worst. But overall, I would say that, you know, even though this does happen, I consider myself really fortunate that I haven't had to deal with it that much. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of the community question they asked at the end about who was someone that encouraged you and whether or not you felt it was important?
Man. I'm always inspired by people who, I mean, Hallie's inspired me. Like, I watch her play, and I wish I could be as poised as she is and as focused as she is. And the people I tend to look up to have qualities that I wish I had. So Hallie's one of them. Gabby Spartz is another one of them. I remember the first time I met Gabby, she was able to be competitive and was still so focused and so calm and so stoic. And, you know, I wish I could exhibit that kind of restraint, because my passion gets a hold of me. My competitive nature gets the best of me. And, I think those are the people that I'm just going to keep watching and keep trying to learn from.
Mm-hmm. One of mine, when I first started playing, was Brooke, who taught me how to play. Mm-hmm. And it was like 2 weeks in, and I knew how to untap and upkeep and draw barely. and he was trying to teach me about the stack, and I kept getting so frustrated, and I was like, you're telling me I learned all these different steps in the game, and there's this whole other imaginary dealy bob that has like floating things in it? What are you talking about? And I got so mad, and I was like, I will never be as good as you. And he's like, Katie, I've been playing since I was 5 years old. I learned how to read while playing this game. And yes, I am 26, so I've been playing it for a long time. And it was like 3 weeks in, and I was like, I want to be as good as you are. And he was like, well, that's not really going to happen overnight, but I will play with you for as long as you want until you get to be as good as I am. And ever since then, like, every time I get frustrated, he's really good at just being like, okay, what could you have done better? Like, you know, just helping me avoid tilt all the time, and like talking through everything that makes me frustrated in Magic and reminding me why I like the game, which for people that are competitive is sometimes hard to see when you think of Magic either as like a chore or a job. You know, at the end of the day, it's a game. And so he always reminds me it's a game. Even though we both think of it as a lifestyle.
Yeah, I had something very similar. I learned how to play Magic from my friend Simon, who was the only friend I had in Seattle when I moved here. And he just taught me how to play, and I crushed him, like, the first time I played. Well, actually, he decked himself, because he made our decks too small. But still, I felt like I did really well in that game, and I technically still won. But I remember the second time that we played, he had donated a whole bunch of, like, Innistrad commons and uncommons to me, and I built these terrible decks, and I insisted he come over to my apartment and play with me. And I remember I got an opening hand that I didn't like, and I was like, can I just draw 7 more cards? And he taught me about mulliganing, and I was like, I don't like this. Can I just draw 7 more cards? And he was like, no. Like, do you want to play Magic in tournaments? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, then you have to learn how to mulligan. And I remember I was so angry at him at the time. Like, this, like, I'm just trying to learn how to play this game. Why can't you let me just do this? And it actually helped me. I think I'm pretty decent at mulliganing now. So I'm really glad that he didn't let me off the hook that one time. And yeah, it was similar. Like, he had been playing for 10 years. He had been playing since he was in middle school. And I wanted to be as good as he was. And so every day, if we weren't playing Magic, then we were on Facebook talking about Magic. And I would just ask him every single question that I could think of. And I just played Magic with him all the time. And then within, like, 6 months, we were doing about the same in tournaments. And my friend Simon has been really awesome, and I look up to him a lot, and I also look up to, you know, like Aaron said, I look up to Gabby a lot, I look up to Jadeen Klemperens a lot. The two of them have been playing Magic about a year longer than I have, and so I always kind of, like, I know it's not good to do this, but I sometimes look at them and I think, like, okay, I want to be where you are in a year. Like, I know it's not good to measure your success in terms of other people's, but it is cool to have people to look up to like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
Chris, you were saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, for me, I learned how to play Magic a couple different times throughout my life, but probably the person that stuck with me the most and made me a better player was honestly Chris. You know, having him take the time to like explain, you know, things to me in a better fashion, or card interactions and other stuff, really helped me want to stay with the game. And I'm also really fortunate to have a really good group of friends that play Magic that'll be like, well, this is what you could have done differently, or hey, let's all sit down together and like we'll analyze your deck and see how to make it better. And so I appreciate that it started with him and then launched into this, you know, bigger group. And I feel like every person that I meet, I try to take something away from like how they play Magic or how they think about Magic to be like, well, could I see it from their viewpoint, or maybe I should try to do something similar to what they're doing and try to use that as a stepping stone to getting better. I don't know if there's any one person that I specifically look up to. I think it's just a bunch of people that all make wanting to get better at Magic and just wanting to play in general such a good experience for me. I was telling Brad when we saw him in Seattle that I liked him because he seemed like a genuine nice person and he cares about the game and all these things. And I totally mean that, because if you're, you know, in this position where you're representing, you know, something, I think that you should be a good person, personable, and just really care about what you're talking about. And I can totally see that from him. I definitely respect Gabby and Jadine and Feline and just all these other people that have played Magic in different formats and they have different skill levels. And I just hope at some point maybe I can be good enough for me. Like, I don't know that I need to be good enough for the rest of the world, but if I feel like I've accomplished what I set out to do with Magic, then that's all I really needed to do.
That's really well put.
And I also feel like I look up to people who you can see visibly struggling with something, and then they, like, improve on whatever it is. I feel just so, you know, proud of them, and like I think it's really cool when people are actually able to change the things they want to change. I have a really good friend who has a really bad problem with Tilt, and he knows it, and we sat down one day and I was like, if you want to get better at Magic, I think that you just need to control your Tilt and learn how to like move past it, because in your next rounds, like, you can't go in with a red haze in front of your eyes, you'll never see your cards. Like, and he's been making, like, huge strides to get better. And every time he, like, takes a loss and he comes up and he's like, I'm mad, but I'm okay. I'm always like, you go. I am just so proud when people, like, you know, take those kinds of things into consideration and really just improve on them.
Mm-hmm. Listener question this week. Send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Our question this week is from a young man named Michael Drysdale. And he says, hello from East Coast, Canada.
Way over there.
Right?
Way over there.
Right? I live in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and have been playing since Revised with a few breaks here and there, and most recently starting back up again with Return to Ravnica. Being a mostly casual player, I love to brew. I always dream of finding that one deck that just wrecks asses. His words, not mine. Wrecks asses. I gotta use that sometime, and takes everyone by storm. But because of real life, I don't have as much time to invest in this as I would like. If I want to get more serious about winning, should I give up the hunt for the perfect brew and just grab a net deck that a pro has used, something that has already been done, or something that someone else has already done the work on? Thanks again, girlfriends. What do you guys think? Should he continue to be a brewer, or can you win and be a brewer?
I think you absolutely can win and be a brewer. I mean, look at people like Sam Black or Gerard Fabiano. Like, every deck that is a major deck has started out as somebody's brew. It's just a matter of getting better at brewing. And I think the way that you do that is just through, like, a lot of systematic testing and just knowing your metagame. So I guess what I would advise this listener to do is, you know, if you haven't already, put together a testing gauntlet of, you know, the big net decks in Standard. And if you have a cool idea, just sort of, like, grab a friend, have them play the net deck, and just run your ideas into them and see, you know, what works, what doesn't, what you could adjust. Sometimes your idea may not work at all, but sometimes there will be, like, subtle ways in which you can improve upon it or just do one little thing different that might actually make your deck a contender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. I guess it depends on, you know, are you going to an F&M and you want to just get better there? Are you going to an open? I guess it depends on what you're playing in. You know, if you think that your brew could do well at a tournament and you've practiced it enough and you want to roll with it, I say live the dream, man. You know, you could be the next God knows what. It could be amazing. But if you're mostly doing brewing, it might be okay to just be like, hey, you know what? I brewed all these crazy decks. I just want to put something together that's been tried and true and has worked for all these other people. It's done well at tournaments. And then see if you actually, you know, like playing like that. Maybe even though it's a good deck, it might not be your thing. You're like, oh, maybe I don't care for this. But I definitely believe in the brew for sure.
Yeah, I think you can take, you have to pick. So I think the quick and fast way to win is to take a net deck and play it. But I think that there is room within net decks for tweaking and brewing on your own. Mm-hmm. Like, you can take a shell and totally just put in, you know, some cards that work in some specific way that when it works, it's like, that's super neat. And, you know, have utility outside of that as well. But I think that there's room to put in lesser known cards into a shell. But I think a quick and fast way is to take a net deck and do well with it, you know, maybe at a bigger tournament and save your brews for fun tournaments like F&Ms or your casual battling Wednesdays or whatever you have, you know, other tournaments going on in your store and just have fun with them. And then once you improve on your brewing, I think brews can definitely sweep a PPTQ and do well in an open. Hell, look at Slivers being played in Modern. So I think there's definitely room for brewers in the community.
Yeah, I think that brewing, especially in Modern, is completely viable. The only thing I would caution against is that brewing comes with a unique set of challenges, and there is definitely more work involved. And I think the people, you know, like Jeff Hoagland, the people like Adrian Sullivan, they have those skills to make brewing shine. You know, like they've both admitted, and other brewers too, that, you know, when you're building from scratch, you're going to lose a lot. And some would argue that you might even lose more than if you were playing a net deck, and you have to be comfortable with that. You have to be willing to keep an open mind when it comes to your card choices and going through Gatherer and not being the type to dismiss suggestions, you know, not being afraid to pick up that odd common from Shards of Alara, even though it might be just the thing you're looking for. You know, knowing what you're good against. Like, you know, one of the things they asked Adrian Sullivan is, what are the decks you're looking to avoid this weekend? And just saying, you know, I've built the deck, I know that I'm not good against these, and I'm okay with that. Whereas with a net deck, you might be better off against everything, if that makes any sense, because they are so refined. But when you are playing a rogue brew, you may have that one gaping hole, that one deck that you're weak against, and you have to be okay with that. So if you're fine with all of the things that it takes to be a brewer and everything that goes into it, I think you can absolutely do that. I think where the problem comes into play is where people try to brew and treat it as if it were a net deck, and not realizing that it takes a unique set of skills and comes with unique challenges, and that's why it doesn't always work. So, but some people love that, and they live for that, and they wouldn't have it any other way. And I love them, and I think other people do too. Like, I feel like when I'm watching coverage and you see the rogue brews, I feel like the response is so much more different. You know, like when people see Tron, they're like, oh, it's Tron, you know, we like the pilot, we hope it wins. But when you see a deck like Slivers, or you see the Lone Pox do its thing, people are just like, oh man, like they want to live the dream, and they want to do it through that person. And I think that's why I love watching coverage, is for those decks. Because, yeah, Splinter Twin, of course you expect to see them at the 7-1 table, but you don't expect to see it up against Slivers. You don't expect to see an Aether Vial go up to 5 and a Sliver Hive Lord come out. I mean, that's what people want to... Perhaps people watch coverage where they want to be entertained. And, you know, if you put in that time, you could be that person. And there's just nothing like that feeling. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, I actually had something this week. I signed up for GP Madison yesterday.
Yay!
So I'm coming to visit you guys.
Fantastic. Yay! Are you coming, Katie?
I don't know if I can swing it. It'd be a tight squeeze. I'd have to fly out, like, Friday night and fly back Sunday night. So it'd be, like, a jam-packed full weekend.
What are we gonna do with you, you know?
I know. I'm looking forward to Oakland, and that's like the nearest thing on my radar so far.
All right, well, I will give you a little bit of incentive. So if you can make it out to Oakland, I've been talking with the professor from Tellurian College, the YouTube channel, and he happens to live around that area, and he said that if we all happen to be in the area for Oakland, he would like to make a video with us.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. I'm going to be there, because my mommy lives there, so I'm going to go visit her.
Well, I'm just saying, because Lord knows you're going to say you're going, and then it's like,
it's 100%.
I have to write a thesis. I have to file a cow's hooves down. I have to do something important and wonderful, and then we're going to be there without you. And
No. I will give my vow, what is it, like three fingers up?
The Boy Scout. Girl Scouts.
I've got some fingers in the air, and I'm waving them like I just don't care.
Do you swear on a soft cookie?
Yes.
Okay. Ugh.
We can't trust her word, then. She's not part of the hard cookie variety. Ugh.
Oh, man. Well, Hallie, I look forward to seeing you for GP Madison. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you guys. Gabby said she would be there. Lems is going to be there. Hopefully some listeners will be there, so I'm excited.
Yeah, we have a listener, I think his name's Addison, and he said he wanted us to sign cards.
Yeah,
which Katie will not be taking advantage of.
And I have this like perfect signature.
Have you been practicing? Do you have like your little notebook?
No, but my signature is really cool.
Her signature is better than mine.
Oh yeah,
I can attest to that.
I can't wait to see it now.
I'll send you some signed cards.
Yeah, so that when you're not in Madison, we can at least give people something. Where it's like, well, Katie couldn't be here, but here's a signed card in her absence.
It's just a shitty common.
Just a shitty common. But make it, like, a fun common. Like, have it be, like, a trolley card or something and, like, send it.
A perfect troll card.
Right?
Because you're always trolling us, so it would make perfect sense.
Yeah, just, like, sign in a gate or something.
Surprise, motherfucker. The only thing that I had was in relation to the question that we had about brewing. If you do like modern and you like to brew but still have a little bit of a competitive edge, I just wanted to kind of name drop my friend Aaron's podcast. It's called Turn One Thoughtsies. You can find them on Twitter at T1Thoughtsies, and their website is www.turnonethoughtsies.com. They always come up with some really interesting stuff. He's been my testing buddy as of late, and definitely check him out for some crazy, awesome modern brews.
And I did something today that was not magic related, but was so cool. So we got to go do a root canal on a grizzly bear.
What?
What?
Yes.
Whoa. You mean like?
Did you trink it?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm gonna need you to set the scene and walk me through this, because.
So there's a grizzly bear, and I can't say his name because it's confidential. But he's in movies and stuff.
Wait! There's doctor-patient confidentiality with animals.
Oh yeah, you can get kicked out of vet school if you like post pictures on social media without people's like permission and stuff.
That I understand. But is this like Law and Order, where like if something were to happen and there was a crime and they were like, we need the grizzly bear's medical records, you wouldn't be able to give them over? Like,
yeah.
What, for animals?
Mm-hmm. Animals have rights now.
That's what I hear.
Like in a lot of states, like sometimes, I don't remember what state it is, but they're passing laws where like animals can sue people, and they have like lawyers that represent them. Yeah, I don't really understand how it works, but like if an animal's like abused, a lawyer can take its case and represent him or her in a court of law, and the animal comes and like sits in a little chair. And the people sit, like, in the other little chair, and they have a court case.
And they take a deposition from an animal?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works, but it's happening.
Oh, my God. That just reminds me of the episode of The Simpsons with the screaming caterpillar, and they have the screaming caterpillar in the chair, and they were trying to charge Homer Simpson with, like, insecticide or whatever. It's like, what? How do you... But... And unless there is another animal representing the animal in question in a suit, I refuse to ever watch that trial.
man. Well, if this podcasting thing doesn't work out, I'm going into animal law. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
I'll be like the Alexander Cabot of animals. Just I object. Move to strike. See? So walk me through this. So you have this bear and you can't name. Okay, so I'm assuming that you put them under.
Yeah, so he came up to, so we were doing the surgery in, like, a large animal surgery suite, so it's designed for horses and, you know, big animals. And his trailer pulled up, and you, like, open the door of the trailer, and he has, like, a bar, like, bars, like, jail bars.
I'm imagining him driving the trailer.
No, he's riding a lot. But if he, like, gets up and moves, the whole trailer, like, sways back and forth. It's, okay. Like, rocking. And so he's, like, behind these jail bars, and they drew up his, like, pre-anesthesia meds in what's called, like, a jab stick. So there's, it's like a, you know, 4 foot long pole that has a syringe on one end, and you just kind of, like, poke him and inject it really quick. And then, you know, he went to sleep, and then it took, like, 11 of us to pull him out. He's, like, 1,000 pounds.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and we pulled him onto this, like, really big rolly table deal.
Like a gurney?
Yeah, but it has, like, all these different pads and things that move in weird ways so you can, like, position his arms and stuff.
Wow.
And we took him into the surgery suite, and then he had broken off a canine.
Ooh.
And, like, halfway through, so we gave him a new tooth and did a big root canal, and, cleaned out his little ears, and then we put him back in the trailer and then woke him up and he went on his merry day.
So he was completely sedated through the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm just imagining some horror. Like, I'm imagining that scene in Independence Day where, like, you think it's sedated and all of a sudden his jaws just, like, fly open, like, oh my God, just...
Yeah, there was, a few times where the doctor who was working on his tooth would, like, move his whole head, but, like, his hand was, like, underneath the jaw, and we'd all be like...
I jumped when you said that.
It's okay. But, yeah, there was a couple times where you'd look over and the huge head was just, like, rolling around, and you were like, oh, my God.
Oh.
But he was not awake.
See, I didn't know that veterinarians doubled as dentists, too.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Dentals and, like, dogs are really common. This vet said he, like, worked on tigers and lions, and he goes to, like, different zoos, and all he does is, like, dentals, but he also does dentals for, like, exotic animals. So he was like, this is my tiger file, and I use this one on tigers, and we were all, like, neat.
So what role did you play in this? Because you said there were 11 of you, so, like, were you just, like, holding a tube or, like, a light, or what did you do?
We didn't really get to do a ton. We just got to, observe. We took his temperature, which is not the most exciting because it's rectally.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, no. Most of it was just, like, watching. But he was, like, explaining step by step, like, this is how you do a root canal on an animal, and it was really cool.
I'm still laughing about the thermometer.
I still think it's funny that its official term is jab stick.
Me too.
It's like, grab my jab stick for me. Poke, 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 poke. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, he's a big boy.
Oh, I'm glad the bear is feeling better. Didn't you also do something with a cow, too?
Yeah, last week I met a cow, and he was so nice. We were the best of friends.
Aww.
I learned how to put a halter on him, so it wasn't really very exciting. But
wait,
can be
a
super
halter,
hungry.
Like a halter top?
That's what I thought too.
No, like a little head harness.
Oh,
like what horsies have on their heads?
I prefer
like
halter top.
Where their reins come from?
Why does a cow need reins?
It just needs a lead rope, so you can like lead it to where you want it to go.
Okay. Where are you leading a cow, though?
To get
well,
milk,
like, you have to go catch him in the pasture. And cows can run really fast, so...
Can't you just, like, train a herding dog to do that?
Yeah.
I guess. If you want to put in the time to train them. You could also just catch it, so...
So did you have to catch the cow, then?
Yes, we did have to catch the cow.
Hell no.
So, I'm just imagining you running through a pasture and like this cow, like, you know how, like, okay, go with me on this one. Remember in the old Scooby-Doo cartoons where, like, the Scooby kids would be chasing the monster and, like, it would run to the right and then it would flip and the monster would run to the left and the kids would be behind it? I'm imagining that being Katie with the cow. So, like, Katie's chasing the cow, moo, and then it goes moo, it goes the other way and Katie's like, wait up, and...
Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, Katie chasing the cow with, like, Yakety Sax playing in the background.
A lot of it is actually just, like, slow walking. And then they kind of, like, gallop away if they don't want you to catch them. And then you just kind of keep slow walking after them. And then, but they like, you know, they're a herd animal, so they like to stay together. So if you kind of break them away from the herd and they keep galloping away, usually they'll curve back to the herd so you know where they're gonna go, so then you can kind of just like slowly follow them, and then, you know, they can't keep running for forever, so hopefully you catch them sometime.
My god, I feel like you live in a whole other universe, Katie.
I feel like that too right now. It was not like this before, and now it is. I sent my mom a picture and I was like, don't post this on Facebook, but look at this really cool grizzly bear face. And she was like, what are you, at school? And I was like, yeah, it's like a field trip thing.
Oh my god!
If only you could put that on your Christmas cards, that would be amazing.
I know. Yeah, like, we didn't ask for like explicit permission. We might be able to post him because he is like a, you know, well-known bear.
Celebrity bear.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, him being on some other site when he's been in movies is an issue, but I didn't specifically ask, so.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You'll be hearing from his lawyer.
Katie will not be joining us next week as she's currently in litigation.
Oh, God. How weird would that be if I was, like, got to jail and, you know, the jail ladies are like, so what are you in for? And I'm like, I got sued by a bear for posting this picture on my Facebook.
They're all, like, boasting about their crimes. Like, what are you in for? Oh, you know, armed robbery. What are you in for? Prostitution. What are you in for? I put pictures of a bear up and got sued. Like, ooh.
In my own category. Badass.
And then he'll, you...
he'll get all Hollywood on you and be like, you'll never work in this town again, Miss Neal.
I'm afraid we're going to have to put you in solitary, ma'am, because the other prisoners are too afraid of you.
What's she in for? She posted pictures of a bear on the internet. No, we've heard about her.
She's been in the rumor mill a while.
Katie the Bear Neal.
Oh, God.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us on the show, how can they find you all? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter. Sorry, I'm still trying to keep a straight face. I'm laughing so hard. I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com, and you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can shoot me an email, katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ. That is also my Tumblr. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. And that's you to Chris. And then I have a Snapchat, Cryptic Command, spelled with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and we are also on Gathering Magic. You can find us every Friday, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye!